I have to turn it over.
I'll do special.
Is that what's on the list?
As on the list. Special.
Special.
Let's keep this one going, so
yeah. Yeah.
Okay, from my point of view, I very much appreciate your guys' perspective on the industry with decades of history and reading these issues when they came out and understanding the medium at the time and how all this stuff interacted. I love hearing that stuff. I don't care about stupid stuff like skin color and gender. It just, if you're a fan, you're a fan and you have that history, and I like hearing that history. Now, yeah, getting different perspectives is cool. It just, to me, like if you compare, like, you know, oh, I want to hear a woman's perspective on the Wonder Woman movie. My perspective is going to be more similar to a male comics fan's perspective than it is to a woman who isn't into comics, if that makes any sense.
No, absolutely. But see, you're a person who actually is well-versed in comics. You may be more specialized, but you are well-versed and you have interesting things to say. And if I, like, you are known for doing a Wonder Woman podcast. And so if I don't go to you and ask you about these Marvel characters and get your perspective on that, then we may never get to hear it because you've got your island of Wonder Woman, your Paradise Island over there. So a part of it is just getting folks out, especially because I know a lot of DC people, getting them off of DC Island or getting them off of their specialty areas and coming, okay, go over here and tell me what you know about these characters and how you think about these characters. And also sometimes I do get like really interesting perspectives where it's stuff that I've never thought about. And because I kind of know, you know, I was a comic retailer for, you know, 8 years. I've been involved with comic books for like 40 years. And so a lot of what other people are going to say within like my sphere is very predictable. I know what this dude's going to say. I know what this dude's going to say. It's one of those things where you ask a few questions, I pretty much can get a beat on what this person's going to say. So part of it is that it's just more novel for me, more interesting for me to get somebody from a completely different perspective. And it's all, and especially like, I know what the dude who read the run of Avengers is going to say about, say, Jocasta. And I honestly, I don't think anybody has ever pointed out that Jocasta is from mythology, you know? Something as simple as that is like, oh, is that where that's from? Is that, oh, she's Oedipus's mother? Different walks of life, different perspectives. It's like that makes it more interesting for me because I don't know what's going to come up from that. I know what, you know, a lot of the dudes that I know are going to say. I can predict it. And then when I'm sitting there trying to edit it, I'm bored out of my mind. So it's not just about like equality points. It's also just I want to hear from different kinds of people that will surprise me and tell me something I didn't know or didn't expect to hear, you know.
Okay, that's fair. I know, you know, whenever I hear it's like, oh yeah, and Byrne's run was really great and I really loved the shading and Roy Thomas's dialogue and yada yada, and I'm like, okay, I feel like I'm an idiot because I don't know anything about that level of detail for this stuff. I just go, yeah, that artwork looks cool, it's better than the stick figures I can draw.
Well, it's like when I was listening to Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace and you would start talking about like the type of vases they had in this particular time period and pulling up from the like the real lore, and I'm like, I don't know any of this is completely like, I feel like such a boob because you say it like so nonchalantly. It's like, okay, and it didn't even sound like this is research, she just knows this stuff. And so she obviously has a better education in things that matter than me. I have
an
education in four colors.
It is all research.
Well, you pull it, you sell it well then. But yeah, so some of that stuff, because that's the thing. I wouldn't even know how to find out that information. I wouldn't know how to search it. I wouldn't be able to articulate the question well enough to get an answer for it. So again, it's just, you know, variety is the spice of life. What can I tell you?
Yep, indeed.
It's been like 3.5 years since the last time we actually spoke to one another.
Yeah, that happens.
It's a very podcasty kind of thing to do. The other thing that kills me is, okay, so you were gone for all of last year, and then you just came back this year. And I, of course, did not record any Diana Prince Wonder Woman's all of last year. And I had intended to go ahead and get started back again this year. So, and I also had all those recordings of you. So the whole time you were gone, if I'd been able to get the Marvel Handbook started sooner, then you would have had a presence in podcasting throughout the year that you were out. And of course, I failed you in that respect. I only just barely got the show going shortly before you returned, and here you have been back for several months, and now I'm finally getting your recording set up for the first time appearing on the Marvel Handbook. So yes, I have not done you any favors in this. And I was actually going to ask you too, you're in the third season of Wonder Woman now, aren't you?
Yes, I'm going to be reviewing the second episode on my next show.
Are you looking at doing something like Super Friends for that slot, or are you just going to give yourself a break after the TV show's done?
I am probably going to give myself a break, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it's going to take at least another year or two, how many episodes are in that season. But I guess there's the now two animated movies that I can cover.
I still haven't seen Bloodlines. I just don't. Whenever I see her in that awful,
I need to.
Whenever I see her in that awful New 52 sort of kind of costume, I just can't. I just can't.
Yeah, with the silver and dark blue. Yeah. Yeah, I don't care for that look.
Plus, it's kind of sort of another origin story. It's like, didn't we do that a decade or so ago already?
Yeah, but this is, I guess, a new incarnation or something. Supposedly, all those animated movies are supposed to be one continuity. Or most of them? I haven't seen...
My impression was that Justice League War started... My impression was that Doom was the last of the Bruce Timm Diniverse that started with the Batman the Animated Series. And so Doom is the end of that continuity, essentially. And so a new continuity begins with Justice League War, which is sort of the... it actually begins with the Flashpoint Paradox. And so going forward, that's been its own continuity separate from any of the prior animated series, particularly the Justice League animated series. So that's part of my problem is it's such a clear demarcation point so I don't have to watch anything else. And so for the most part, I haven't, because what I have seen of those, I have not enjoyed. So, but I have to eventually see a one-on-one cartoon because it's the one-on-one cartoon.
Right, yeah. I need to, if I hadn't been on hiatus, I'm sure I would have covered it when it came out, but that's not what happened.
It's one of those where I'm pretty sure it's going to be free on one of the streaming services before long, if it isn't already. And so I'll probably hunker
down. I'm sure it's on DC Universe. I don't have that one, but
I think a lot of that stuff is going to be, look it up. I think a bunch of that stuff is going to be on HBO Max too. So I'm hoping that's where I'm going to end up checking out. Because we already have HBO.
If they bring I don't have HBO, but if they bring Barbara Gordon into well, depending on how they do it, if they bring a good version of Barbara Gordon that's not disappointing again into the third season of Titans, then I will probably subscribe to something for that, and then I can see Bloodlines that way. Bloodlines.
Yeah. No. I'm a fan of the universally reviled DC Comics event Bloodlines from the early 90s, so I'll never forget that name because everybody's like, they're doing a Bloodlines movie. I'm like, no, they're not. And I was completely right.
I'm not familiar. Wait, was that like aliens or something? Mm-hmm. Like xenomorph style aliens?
Absolutely. It was a bunch of aliens knockoffs that were particularly well designed by Art Adams, but otherwise, yeah, it's basically xenomorphs versus the DC universe. It's really as simple as that. And probably the single most repetitive annual event they ever did, because how many different ways can you have people get infested by aliens, fight the aliens, kill the aliens, don't kill the aliens, move on to the next one? It really is super duper repetitive. It's just, I really, really like aliens versus superheroes, so I was able to see that like 20 times and not get tired of it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, judging by the Ripley Scott franchise, twice. Yeah, I have a coworker who's just now getting into the more expanded areas of the MCU, and so I was sharing with her a Comic-Con panel for Hall H, whatever it is, where they announced Phase 3, and I was explaining, you know, so they started out by saying Captain America 3 is going to be called Serpent Society, and that would have been cool, but then they revealed it's Civil War and everybody freaked out, and she's like, Serpent Society? And so I was looking into that. Oh, okay, it's this group that's all a bunch of snake themed villains. And then I'm like, you know, you could do that with cat themed villains too in DC, you know, Catwoman, or not even necessarily just villains, but Catwoman, Cheetah, Vixen,
Panther, Wildcat.
Sure, yeah,
indeed. Actually, yeah, I got a buddy that's a big friend of the super fan of the Serpent Society, so he's a little bummed when they switched over to Civil War. He's like, I wanted the Serpent Society movie.
I mean, I can understand. I sent my friend my friend at work links. It was timestamp links. Here's the cheering when they said Captain America 3 Serpent Society, and here's the crowd going completely wild when at the very end they said, oh, actually it's Civil War, and just the whole place exploded. So I'm sure Serpent Society would have been cool, but come on, man, Civil War. Let's be honest here. That was Avengers 2.5.
Well, they already made the G.I. Joe movie, so we don't necessarily need the Serpent Society movie. I'll be honest with you, for me as an old school fanboy, that was one of the moments that broke Marvel Comics for me, was when everybody suddenly became an Avenger. Just like, and I'm sure you're going to have words about this, just like when Bucky came back, I just couldn't forgive that.
Yeah, I remember the the first time I heard about Bucky coming back. I'm like, you can't do that. That's Captain America's whole reason for being a hero, is to you know, make up for Bucky. You bring Bucky back, Cap can, you know, retire. But I will say, it was awesome, you know, the first time you hear, and the sequel to Captain America is going to be called Winter Soldier. You know, all the comics fans knew exactly what that meant. And then you had non-comics fans go, oh my goodness, Bucky's back. It's like, yes, people, pick up a comic book.
A friend of mine was in the movie theater and he heard a normie gasp when they revealed that it was Bucky.
Oh, I'm pretty sure Captain America, the First Avenger. I don't know about that name, man. You say the First Avenger and people think you're talking about the First Avengers. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They should have. I know what they were doing, but it should have been named differently, maybe. But I remember the first Captain America movie when he fell off the train. I was like, see you later, Bucky. See you later as Winter Soldier. Well, kind of obvious.
And I'll admit it works great in the movies. I mean, it's a little bit of a stretch. No matter what you do, it's going to be a bit of a stretch, but it works kind of perfectly in the movies, and they've used it very effectively there. So it's the comic books where I'm a nerd about it, but the movie's like, okay, that works, because you can see why he would so desperately want to save this one last vestige of his life, you know, his original life. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So
spoiler alert, you're a nerd. I'm a nerd. We're allowed to nerd out about these things. It really is okay.
Yeah,
we always want to be, oh, and I don't want to be too dorky about this. Dude, we're into comic books. These were written for children. This is what, 30, 40 year old comic at this point? It really is okay to nerd out about it.
We did an hour on a 2-page spread of headshots. So yeah, I think it's time to set aside the denials.
Yep, pretty much.
Now, Miss Marvel, though, I'm sure you got a little bit more of a handle.
A little bit. Obviously, I know her more post becoming Captain Marvel. I don't know. I saw her movie. It was fine. I believe the review I gave, I texted my friends after leaving the theater, was this was my least favorite Phase 1 movie, until I remember that Incredible Hulk was a Phase 1 movie. But yeah, no, she's fine.
Damning with faint praise.
I'm sorry. They made a Phase 1 movie right before Endgame. I mean, they even brought back the Tesseract and did all this prequelitis with, oh, well, see, she's where we got the name Avengers. It's just like, guys, we don't need to fill in these details. This is Solo-level territory. We don't need to know that he got the name Solo because the guy at the ooh, I can curse on your show. Yay. With the guy at the dang, at the recruitment office said, oh, well, you're alone. You're Solo. You're Han Solo. We don't need to know these details. We didn't need to know the stuff I mean, yes, to bring her in to the world and the movies, great, awesome, got no problem with that, but the prequelitis just bugged me to death.
And for me, I was really thirsty for continuity porn that I didn't get. In fact, they ignored so much stuff from things like Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I know nobody else cares about, but it just frustrated me so much that that was like one of the movies I was most looking forward to, and therefore it was one of my biggest disappointments.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, what did they do in S.H.I.E.L.D. that they, to be fair, I'm like 2 seasons behind on S.H.I.E.L.D., but...
Well, all the stuff with the Kree, they didn't touch on any of that. They contradicted stuff.
That's true.
You know, so yeah, so I was hoping to see some connectivity there, and instead it's like we kind of did our own thing with the Kree. I didn't think they did something, like, the language was different. I think the color of the blood was different. It's like all this little stuff where it's like, this is basic, guys. You just clearly didn't care, and that's fine. That's your choice.
Yeah. But
it's a bummer for me as a fan.
They are technically two different, like, companies, right? Marvel TV versus Marvel Studios. Well, they were at the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I can't wait for the new season, by the way. I really didn't like the last season, and I was...
When I saw... Sorry, go ahead.
I really didn't like the previous season. I loved seasons 4 and 5, and then I really did not like the 6th season at all, and I was like, okay, it's ready to just go ahead and wrap this up. It's time. This show is ready to be done. And then when they gave us Cliffhanger, I was like, oh God, I don't want to see them in the future and any of that stuff. But then when it's like, oh no, we're going to go back and hang out with Agent Carter and her buddies and stuff, I'm like,
I'm
there.
The Agent Carter thing that made me go, okay, I need to catch up, because I was like, I had left off end of season 4, and then I started the first episode or two, and then I looked and I'm like, oh wait, Inhumans was only 8 episodes. Yeah, ooh. Okay, I guess I'll watch that. And I watched that and slightly put a damper.
No kidding.
But I gotta get back into S.H.I.E.L.D. season 5, because I mean it's just an awesome show. Yeah,
4 was my favorite.
I got a chance. Sorry, I was just a fan out. I got a chance to get a picture with Ming-Na Wen at a convention a couple of years last year. So that was awesome.
See, the funny thing is they got pretty much the entire cast of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. here in Houston during the first season when I did not like the show. And then several seasons on, when I like it, I would have like been like wanting to go meet them. They've never come back again. Like, none of them have ever come back to Houston again. And it's like, no, you're welcome now. The show got good.
That turn, I kept up with it. I was like, okay, it's not the best show, but let me at least keep up with it. And then, like, I was a couple of episodes behind. No, I wasn't a couple. Yeah, well, okay, I was a couple episodes behind when Winter Soldier came out, because I said, oh, okay, clearly it's going to tie into Winter Soldier somehow. So I watched Winter Soldier, and the twist with Hydra blew my mind. And like, leaving the theater, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see what they do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with this. And then, excuse me, the show complete 180, and you had to watch every week because it was so amazing. That was the biggest turnaround I've ever seen in a show.
Yeah, I hated Grant so much until it was clear what he was there for. And then it's like, okay, now suddenly this is way more interesting.
See, I thought he was just kind of generic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, okay, he's the generic soldier hero type. Yeah, that's fine. You know, he's the straight man that everybody else plays off of. And then they turn him into the bad guy and they don't redeem him. And it was so amazing.
So you said you did finish season four, right?
I finished season four, where they got kidnapped in the diner. Mm. I've started season five. The first episode, I'm like, wait, this guy knows who they are. They don't recognize anything. They're in the future, aren't they? And then that big reveal at the end of the episode, hey, we're in the future. I'm like, ha, I knew it.
Four was my favorite season. I loved four to death. And then five wasn't quite as good as four, but it's still really good. So I would honestly go like, four is number one, five is number two. So there's still good stuff to come. Six is a slog. I hated six felt so completely unnecessary, but I can't tell you part of the reasons why without spoiling stuff. So I'm just going to leave it alone.
Yeah, no worries. Five was supposed to end with, it was supposed to line up with Infinity War, right? And people were going to get snapped, but then Infinity War like moved its release date by a couple of weeks, and that messed with things. So they had to, I don't know. I'll figure it out when I get there.
I think that they completely divorced themselves from the reality of the Marvel movies after four. You know, five barely references Infinity War at all. Never happened as far as they're concerned. So they're kind of in their own reality at this point.
Well, oh, well. I mean, it would have been nice to have like a couple of the cast in the background on the helicarrier during Age of Ultron, but I can understand. I mean, just from a logistics point of view, you know, a TV or a movie is planned out years in advance. You know, the cat, they film it, you know, easily a year ahead in order to do all the special effects and stuff. Whereas a TV show, you plan it months or weeks in advance. And so, you know, I can understand why they couldn't make that work out, but it would have been cool if they'd have managed.
At least we got Jarvis.
I was just going to say the sight of Jarvis in Endgame made me so excited. Because I love Agent Carter so much. It was just like, oh my goodness, there's Jarvis. That's so cool. Oh, I like Black Widow. I really like what they've done. And I'm really looking forward to her solo movie. That should be awesome.
A little frustrating, you know, to have. We waited so long to get her solo movie, and it's almost there, and now it's November.
Yeah, I know. I mean, what you gonna do, man? I'd rather they release it theatrically than, unless we're getting into New Warriors, not New Warriors, what am I saying? Unless we're getting into New Mutants territory, I'd rather them push it back than just release it digitally.
Okay, just between you and me, we're both fans. Aren't you just a little bit glad we're going to get a second Wonder Woman movie before the first Black Widow one?
I don't know that that's that big of a deal to me, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, more movies with cool superheroines, yay. I don't particularly care which comes first, to be honest.
Well, it bugged me because we were supposed to get Wonder Woman last year, and I'm sure at this point they really wish they'd given it to us last year. So we went from being before Black Widow and then to after Black Widow, and now it's back to being before Black Widow. So, I don't know, I feel like there's a little bit of a karmic balance being reset there.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I've heard rumors that they may get pushed back again, so
yeah, nobody knows what's going to happen these days.
Nobody knows. We're just hanging out. Everything's going to be fine. We just have to ride this out. Everything's going to be fine. See, I don't know, because I came into comics and superheroes from the era where it was first possible to represent the stuff accurately on screen. You know, Spider-Man, it was like the first time you're using CGI to have him swing around and whatnot. I don't know if culturally superheroes were so looked down upon that no one wanted to do a movie versus it was just too difficult logistically to do a movie.
I think it was a combination, because the one that really broke superheroes initially was Superman the Motion Picture. And of course they had Marlon Brando and Mario Puzo was writing it and Gene Hackman's in it. And so I think that there was a perception that they had stacked the deck to make it happen, so that by the time you got to Superman Superman 3, where they were trying to have Richard Pryor carry it, they felt like it was about the performers that carry the movie more than the material. And again, there was a sort of sheepishness about superheroes. And they made a few other attempts, like the Supergirl movie, that just did not go over at all. And so I think that there was a perception that the Superman movie went over as well as it did because of the talents they'd involved with it. And if you get a great bunch of great talents, then of course you're going to have a great movie. And so it just happened that they wasted those talents on a Superman movie that made a bunch of money at least. And it really wasn't until Batman that they started thinking maybe the property has more to do with the success than the people involved. Now, obviously, you've got to have talented people to translate that material, but it wasn't really until the 90s before they started seeing some intrinsic appeal to the actual comic book properties. And I do think that Power of the Duck was probably seen as much more viable than, say, a Spider-Man. Plus, you know, the rights were so screwed up. Marvel basically were prostituting their property all over town to the point where this person had TV rights and this person had animation rights and this person had movie rights. So even if you wanted to make those movies, it would have been very difficult. But at the end of the day, Howard the Duck still made a lot more money than the Punisher movie. So what can you say?
Which Punisher movie? or all of them combined?
I think the Travolta one did okay. I think the Travolta one made some money. I don't know about the rest of them. I'd have to check to see if Warzone, 30 years after Howard the Duck, made less money than Howard the Duck. I bet you it did, to be honest with you.
Oh, come on. That had, is that Dominic West?
Yep.
I'm thinking.
Yep, as Jigsaw.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Yeah, clearly, you know, he's great in superhero movies. Why would that not be a good thing?
That's another one of those terrible movies that some people really, really enjoy and defend. And I can see why they would like it, but I'm going to stick with my Howard the Duck.
I watched it once. I don't know enough about Punisher to be perfectly honest with you, but it seemed like, okay, yeah, that's a guy going around shooting people, shooting bad guys, and you've got this crazy villain with his face all cut up.
That's a Punisher movie. That's apparently what a Punisher movie is.
That's the Punisher right there. Goes around shooting bad guys. That's his shtick. This RoboCop without the robot and without actually being a cop. So
I have
not
two
like
rules.
RoboCop at all.
I have two rules. No murder and no parkour.
That's not RoboCop, is it?
No. I say a parkour, the thing where they were jumping around the rooftops and stuff.
Yeah.
It's okay. They're not all going to land. I understand that. When you put yourself out there, just it's not always going to work out. I was going for a joke. It didn't work out. That'll come out in the edit.
Editing that one out. Moving on and scene. No. I can understand there are movies where if you watch them as an adult, it's dumb. But if you watch it as a kid, it's great. I will fully acknowledge that the movie Hook to, I'm sure, your generation and those older is pretty dumb.
I liked it. But I saw
for
it in
a
the
kid
theater.
Like me. Sorry, say.
I saw Hook theatrically. I liked it pretty well. I haven't tried to watch it since the theatrical, but I liked it in theatrical.
Okay. Well, I watched it as a kid. I don't think I saw it in the theater. I would have been a little young at that point. But no, I love Hook. But I will fully acknowledge that it is a movie where you have to watch it as a kid, otherwise you don't get it. Same with this is gonna get me in trouble. Same with Ghostbusters. I didn't see the first Ghostbusters until I was in my 20s, and I don't care that much about Ghostbusters. It doesn't hold any special place in my heart. So if I'd have seen it as a kid, maybe that'd be a different story. But
let me tell you, that movie was so hyped on the playground when I was a kid, and we tried to see it at the Dollar Show, if I remember correctly, and they were sold out. It's one of the only times I ever went to a movie that was actually sold out, especially at the Dollar Show. And so I didn't get to see it until VHS. We rented it on a video, and I was so disappointed by it. And I saw the second one theatrically, and I thought that one was all right. But it's one of those movies where people just rave about it. They've raved about it like almost my entire life. And I'm just like, it's kind of lost to me. And the only thing that I can come up with is the cartoon was really good. And I think that a lot of these people that are hardcore fans were really hooked by the cartoon. But there are tons of people who will still swear by how hilarious Ghostbusters is. And it bores me to tears, to be honest with you. I think it's cute. It's all right. It's got some problematic areas. But it's mostly just amusing moments and some nice performances. But I'm not a big Ghostbusters guy. So when they talk about how sacrilegious this version of Ghostbusters is or this reboot is, I'm like, it's just Ghostbusters, guy. Chill out. It's fine. It's no Gremlins 2 the New Batch.
Oh, see, I thought that was kind of funny.
Oh, I love Gremlins 2 the New Batch. I love
that
movie.
Good.
No,
I thought I was going to get kicked off your show for a second there.
I saw that instead of RoboCop 2, which I believe was out at the same time. But I was more gung-ho to see that sequel, and I have no regrets. I love Gremlins 2 the New Batch. It's so much fun. It's so inventive. I love that I was in the theater and got to watch the film rip and everybody freak out and everything else. That was just a unique experience. And so I will definitely take that over a Ghostbusters any day of the week. But I also like Howard the Duck, so my tastes are very suspect.
Let me put myself in the same boat as you. I saw The Phantom Menace. I was 10 years old and I loved every minute.
There's a lot of people who love it.
I went to see, they re-released it in 3D like a year before Disney bought Lucasfilm and canceled that plan to re-release them all in 3D. And I thought at the time, okay, I'm going to see this. It's like the first time in years. I'm going to finally realize how much it sucks. No, I was 10 years old again. I wanted to give George Lucas a big hug after seeing that.
As you say, sometimes it's about the age it catches you. Yeah. And I definitely, again, I've got me and my buddies, we all three love Howard the Duck. And we did see it at different ages, but all still as kids. So I think that was important. But I love the music. I love Leah Thompson because, you know, she's one of those first early crushers, of course, for both the movies you mentioned and then some. It is terrible. The writing is awful. I don't know if Tim Robbins has ever given a worse performance in his life. Substantial screen time is devoted to Jeff Jones, who is not a person that we want to talk about anymore. It's just got all kinds of issues with it, but it's just so blasted weird and goofy. And like you said, just complete commercial suicide. There's no reason why anybody should have ever thought that this was going to work. And for the most part, it didn't. So I really have a fan. I'm a big fan of the Shaggy Dog. I'm a fan of the movies that just like, what were they thinking? How much coke were they tooting on their way to making this movie? So that's part of it.
I only saw Spaceballs once. This is maybe heresy. I don't care for Spaceballs. It's of the Mel Brooks movies I've seen, it's probably my least favorite, but that's probably because Star Wars is so, I don't want to say sacred, but so classic to me that interpreting it like that is almost heresy. He played Dink. I don't know what that, I don't remember that character from Spaceballs.
I've seen it like twice myself. I can't say that it's the worst because I've seen Robin Hood Men in Tights and Dracula Dead Loving It, and I don't think you can get up more of an eater than the Dracula one. But yeah, it's not one of my favorites.
I haven't seen Dead and Loving It, but I will fight you over Men in Tights. That movie is hilarious.
That's fair, but don't ever see Dracula. It literally was so unfunny. I wasn't sure if he was trying to direct a drama. It was that bad. It's really, really awful. I misjudged Robin Hood. I haven't seen that. I tried watching it one time 20 some odd years ago, but Dracula is definitely a wretched piece of crud.
Yeah. To be fair, the last time I saw Men in Tights, I was like, oh, there were parts in this I didn't remember and they're not as good. But looks like Spaceballs Dink is the stand-in for the Jawas.
Okay, that may be.
So he would have been one of the Jawas, I guess. Which, still, the fact that Mel Brooks said anybody who was in Howard the Duck can be in my movie is just so great. The only other thing I had was apparently Steve Gerber was originally going to do the post-crisis Wonder Woman, but stuff fell out, so Perez did it. That's my input as the Wonder Woman chick.
I think, when was this before or after the Greg Potter thing?
This was like just immediately post-crisis, like crisis had happened, and I think he and Frank Miller were going to spearhead all of the post-crisis characters instead of what Perez and Byrne and all those guys who ended up doing it.
That would have been interesting. I think it worked out the way it was supposed to, and if you ever read the Greg Potter proposal, anything was gonna be better than that. But that would have been probably bad. It would have been interesting, but definitely I think bad. I think that we probably won out of that particular deal.
The bit that I saw, because it was talked about in like news articles and stuff, but it never actually got published. But it seemed like he was trying to take her back to her roots in the 40s, which, I mean, everybody always says, oh, we're taking Wonder Woman back to her roots in the 40s, but then it spins off into, you know, she's the daughter of Zeus and all this other nonsense. So I don't know, one of those things that if a script ever got leaked online, it would be interesting to see. But seeing as how much I love the Perez run, I think that, you know, that was probably the way to go.
Yeah, that, and Gerber is not somebody you get to handle a character if you want them to treat them as though they're sacred in any way. And then Frank Miller has always wanted to do stuff with Wonder Woman that involves all the kinky bondage stuff. So I think that probably would have gone south pretty quickly. So it's probably for the best.
Yeah. Probably. You can cut this part out, to be perfectly honest. I mean, if you don't want to be including Wonder Woman stuff in your
It's kind of on brand, so no big thing there.
Amazing Spider-Man 2.
We can agree, worst Spider-Man movie ever?
Oh, I'm going to get kicked off your show. I liked it more than Amazing Spider-Man 1 because I have a high tolerance for cheese.
As long as the cheese is what you're there for, I can respect that.
It was a zany, I don't know, zany's the right word. Okay, I'll say something non-controversial. Best Spider-Man costume we've seen on screen.
I think I really like Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man, so he's probably my favorite Spider-Man, so there's another controversy right there. But yeah, I thought the Amazing Spider-Man suit looked great. I do enjoy it more than the Marvel one.
Yeah, and it was a bad movie, but it was a bad movie that I can have fun with, versus something like Howard the Duck, which I don't feel the need to rewatch that one with friends anytime soon.
True that. I struggle sometimes. I love Wonder Woman as a character, but I had all these DC shows because I hung out with a lot of DC people and we all had blogs back in the day and stuff, and it's just harder for me ethically to justify pimping out the properties of a company that increasingly are not in alignment with my ideals. I'm so mad at DC Comics for trying to seek outside distribution to try to basically break through and send their comics out to comic shops at a time where it's not safe for that to happen, and putting their commerce over, you know, comic shops, over their relationship with Diamond and everything else. And just like, there's so many things that DC and Warner Brothers and Disney and Marvel do too that I don't feel good promoting. And so a lot of it is just like, when I start to want to work on something like one of the DC podcasts, it's like, well, I could do that, or I could talk about something, you know, that I don't feel as compromised about. Like, I've got a podcast devoted to Dawn of the Dead. Well, that's basically privately owned movie that benefits the family of George Romero, who seemed like a really good stand-up guy. And it was almost like a hometown, like theatrical production where everybody pitched in, you know, just like a local play or something, you know, essentially. And so when I do a podcast about that, I don't feel bad about it. Where when I try to do some of the DC stuff, I'm like mad at myself, because like, why are you spending your time promoting a corporation? So it's not that I don't love Wonder Woman, it's that aspect of it really grinds me down and makes it hard for me to you know, it makes it hard to do the Marvel stuff too. My Marvel podcast has definitely faltered as a part of that. But that's one of the things that's nice about the handbook, is I have a lot of love for that property, and so much of it is about hearing other people sharing their love, as opposed to like, ranking on some crummy story from the 70s or something. It's like, no, it's people talking about their experiences with these characters and what these characters mean to them, and talking to a wider variety of people, and kind of doing something different for me outside of my comfort zone, trying to reach out to so many different people and try to put this thing together. It's not what I would normally be inclined to do. And so I like the challenge of like challenging myself to do that. But also because it is such a love fest and such an opportunity for people to just like, you know, geek out and have fun with it. And so it helps me to overcome obstacles that I have with some of the other shows, because it's like, man, screw the man, eat the rich, you know. My politics start to get in the way after a while.
Yeah, I well, story wise I've been slightly furious with DC ever since they erased Oracle from everything. So yeah. There is a reason I didn't touch the New 52 until I started my show.
Yeah,
because that and all the stuff that they, honestly, man, if Azzarello's run had been an Elseworlds, I'd had a lot less problems with it. Yeah. But the fact that it erased everything before, just...
It's hilarious, because I was just talking about the Odyssey and how damaging that could be, and Azzarello was just like, hold my beer.
Yeah, not inaccurate. Well, I took the bullet of Azzarello for you, so you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I gotta tell you though, it definitely, even just hearing the story secondhand, make me so angry. I'm just so glad that I'm not the one reading this. I'm so pissed off right now at the stuff that I'm hearing.
Yeah, I'm getting to his last issue in my next episode, so whether you want to include this on your show or not, that's up to you. But it's a good story. It's just not a good representation of Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. If it had been, I read maybe three of the Percy Jackson books, but if it had been Helene, the demigoddess, from, you know, in a Percy Jackson style, what if the Greek gods were still having children to this day, I would have no problem with it. If it were an Elseworlds where it was a very different incarnation of Wonder Woman, like, what was it, Wonder Woman Earth 1, I would have much less problems with it. But the fact that it erased everything that came before, and you ask, you know, Joe on the street who doesn't read comics, who's Wonder Woman, and they're going to say she's the daughter of Zeus. I don't know. That's not how that works, man. Just I don't know, just there's this, getting into real deep like philosophy stuff, there's this platonic ideal of Wonder Woman out there that's been built up in the zeitgeist from her nearly 80 some years of history at this point. And you deviate, and it was all heroes, you know, Batman doesn't kill, Superman doesn't kill, and you go against that, and it's just kind of a betrayal of the character's history. And I'm fine with that with an Elseworlds. You want to have an Elseworlds where Batman snaps and starts killing everybody, or Superman snaps and starts killing everybody. That's an interesting story to tell. But you don't erase that in the mainstream continuity, and you don't make a movie version like that, because the movie is going to supersede any history or any knowledge that people have from the comics just by fact that it's a movie. I mean, how many people now think that Harley Quinn started the Birds of Prey and not Barbara Gordon?
I'm just so happy that grinds your gears so much, because they did an honest trailer for it, and I've read some other stuff where they're like, you know, there's some of these butthurt man children just can't stand, you know, the Birds of Prey and blah, blah.
No. Stop with the generalizing. Mm-hmm. Stop with the, oh, you're a guy, that's why you disagree. No, stop. I am a fan of Birds of Prey. That is my favorite superhero team. I have very deep connections to Oracle, as anyone who knows me in real life can tell you. And when they said a Birds of Prey movie, I was like, okay, cool. When they said that Harley Quinn was going to be in charge and basically replacing Barbara, I'm like, you do realize that she's the girlfriend of the guy who shot Babs, right? And the whole reason that Babs set up the Birds of Prey was because she had been shot and she couldn't go out there and kick the bad guys anymore. So she had to put together a team to go out and kick the bad guys for her, and you're erasing all of that by making Harley Quinn, a character that I used to love before she became, oversaturated and, okay,
underdressed.
Comics fans always complain, oh, it's gone mainstream, so now it sucks. But, like, you compare a pre-Flashpoint Batman the Animated Series Danny-style Harley Quinn to Margot Robbie or the more modern incarnations, and it's very much a different character. And I can understand, you know, let's see what happens when Harley leaves the Joker. That is an interesting aspect to take the character in. But you don't do that for her first solo movie. You don't do that where we've had one movie where they had maybe three scenes together. And you don't make her the head of the Birds of Prey.
It's bad enough that you have Oracle erasure, but the specific circumstances and the specific players who do so, and the fact that in that honest trailer, they talk about how the actual team doesn't come together until like an hour and 10 minutes in, an hour and 20 minutes in. I can't imagine that not being galling for a fan of the comic. And so, yeah.
If it had been called Harley Quinn, the movie, subtitle, by the way, some of the Birds of Prey show up at the end, I would have had less problems with it. If it had been Gotham City Sirens, I probably would have loved it. Gotham City Sirens is awesome. I can understand Margot Robbie saying, oh, I want to put more spotlight on these lesser known female characters. That's a laudable goal. But when you erase the core of the character, like, I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure who got the worst deal, Barbara Gordon or Cassandra freaking Cain, man. Good grief.
Because, I mean, there's no similarity whatsoever. It's like, okay, let's take a mute child of an assassin who's bound by an honor code, and let's make her the stereotypical obnoxious chatterbox kid from every movie of the last few decades that has an obnoxious chatterbox kid. Is like, no, I think that definitely Cassandra Cain fans got the worst of that. Because, I mean, I'm a Huntress guy, so like, I probably would come out of this okay. That's one of the only reasons why I still have a slight interest in seeing the movie for free eventually. I can't imagine what would bring a Cassandra Cain fan to this flick, because at the end of the day, at least Oracle isn't in the thing. So even though you hate that it's not the Birds of Prey, at least you're not going to be taunted with a horrific bastardization of anything liked about the character.
I can see that, because I was like, I was like seeing all these posters, Birds of Prey movie, and it's Harley Quinn front and center, and I'm like, that should be Barbara up there on that movie poster. This should be Barbara's time in the spotlight, but Cassandra, man, it's just why?
Maybe a little bit of misfit too, who I also hated.
I can see a teeny bit of misfit, but at least she was I don't know, she was trying to be a superhero. I haven't seen Birds of Prey, so I don't know how much necessarily necessarily they haven't either cast me sort of a superhero.
But. I haven't either. It's just in terms of the role that the character played, I hated Misfit, and I resented her throughout the series. So, and I'm looking at the trailers, like, she reminds me a lot of Misfit, which is not Cassandra Cain at all. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Black Mask and Zsasz, from the looks of it, they seemed more like...
the two characters from Birds of Prey, the couple. Yeah, the blonde-haired guy.
Yeah, the two guys. What were they? Savant and...
I can't remember the name, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, the relationship. Yeah, yeah, so you're porting two characters that are not those characters into those places. And I understand that they were kind of generic pretty boys, especially the way Ed Benes drew them. But like, I like Mr. Zsasz, and I realize that he's basically just Hannibal Lecter with a little extra. But I like Mr. Zsasz, and so when you turn him into the henchman of Black Mask, it's like, that's not the thing about that character I like at all. And so when I've got a trade paperback on my shelf for Mr. Zsasz, and I'm looking at the screen, it's like, well, that character's not represented. You're just going to frustrate me. So that's another reason for me not to see your movie, when you could have just used the guys who are from the books that maybe not as recognizable. You could have given them a cool costume or tattoos or something, and not alienated me as a person who's a fan of other characters that are clearly not being portrayed in this movie.
It was, just from the trailers, it was Fox X-Men levels of comic accuracy. And we should be beyond that at this point, man. The MCU has proven you can make Red Wing work in a movie. You can make Bucky Barnes work in a movie. You can make...
Well, and you got to know where you have the wiggle room. I think when you've got an iconic character, you, like a Captain America, if you veer too far away from his essential appeal, you're going to lose people. I think you have a lot more latitude with a Star-Lord. You've got a lot more latitude with a Gamora. Like, I had some quibbles about the first movie because I thought that Gamora was a different character from the comic books, so I went back and read the comic book and realized that a lot of my perceptions were just incorrect about the character. But I wasn't going to quit a movie just because the Gamora wasn't, you know, precisely the way Jim Starlin had done her, you know. Drax, you've got a wide latitude with. So you take a character that has some recognizability, and you can play with that, where when you've got somebody like a team like the Birds of Prey. I mean, for 50 issues, it was, you know, Oracle and Black Canary. And then for the other 75 issues, you added Huntress to that. And so if you don't have those three characters that were in every incarnation of Birds of Prey prior to this point, then don't do a movie called Birds of Prey. Like you said, you could just name it something else and you'll be fine. The problem is they didn't do that, and then they don't understand why that alienates people. And I think it gets back to the reason why Marvel does well and DC doesn't, because at the top levels of Marvel Studios are people who are fans and know which characters you can push in different directions and which ones you have to stay true to. And at DC, you have executives. And I'm not sure, I'm basically quoting a podcast I listened to recently. I'm not sure who it was who was saying that. Oh, you know what? It might have actually been an interview recently. I'm trying to remember who said it, but I do think it makes all the difference. Is you have to have somebody who's invested in the source material to tell you what you can get away with and what you can't, and they don't have that person at DC, and it shows.
Mm-hmm. Well, they tried to with Geoff Johns, right? And then they weren't able to save Justice League, so they got he and whoever his partner was, they got fired because somebody's head had to roll for Justice League, and Zack Snyder was already gone, and they weren't going to blame Joss Whedon. Yeah, but well, Johns he greenlit Aquaman too, right?
Yeah. I think he may have helped with the script with that as well, and certainly he helped with the script on Wonder Woman. So it's not like he didn't have successes. But he also set up a shingle at Warner Brothers. So I don't know if it was a fired so much as like maybe not taking so many hits by not being involved with all the DC movies that don't work. I don't know. It's tricky there because I don't know how much of that is his fault. But looking at the comics, there's a good chance there is a lot of it that was his fault. But I don't know. It's tough to say. But yeah, I think Geoff Johns was sort of like DC's Brian Michael Bendis, and they don't need a Bendis as much as they need a Feige.
Right. They definitely need a Feige. And anytime DC, call me up. I will set everything right. Trust me, the fans will love me. I don't know the first thing about movie producing, but just put me in charge of creative decisions and we'll be probably, well, we can't do much worse. Let's put it that way.
I hate to say it, but I mean, I'm trying to think of like who I know is like involved with movies that could serve in that capacity, who could like understand that sometimes you have to work to the strength of the film and sometimes you have to reflect the comics. Kevin Smith?
Maybe. He had a Superman script at one point, didn't he?
Yeah. But I mean, it's somebody who is enough of a fan who could protect the characters while also not suffocating them and letting them be movies too. I wouldn't want him directing any of them. I wouldn't want him writing any of them. But maybe he would actually be a good executive to safeguard
of the characters, maybe. I don't know. He's also the guy who had Batman voluntarily pee on himself, so I'm sure there are a lot of people that have some other opinions on that, but I'm trying to, that's one of the only people I can think of that we would know of that would potentially be able to fill that kind of role.
What about Paul Dini?
Paul Dini, sure. I think that would be one. Actually, anybody involved
Bruce
with
Tim and...
yeah, Bruce Timm too. Anybody involved with 90s DC animation should definitely be consulted about any of these movies.
Yeah, I would say Bruce Timm and Paul Dini, but Bruce Timm did the animated Killing Joke movie, which I was never going to see that because of what happens in that movie, but at least I thought when they said, oh, we're doing this 20-minute preamble focusing on Batgirl, I thought, okay, well, that'll help. No, that was the wrong thing. That was very much the wrong thing. I can't go into any, like, just YouTube comment section with video with something with Batgirl where people aren't going, hee-hee, dude, her and Batman, hee-hee. It's like, that erased 50-some years of her characterization to just be her and Batman on that rooftop, and every comics fan was like, what are you doing? Why did you do this? Well, it makes no sense.
You were saying, Tim, like, I'm pretty sure that sequence was written by your favorite, Brian Azzarello.
Oh, yeah. It's probably best that I never have him do an interview on my show, to be perfectly honest with you. But yeah, Bruce Timm was involved. He was involved. Dini was not involved, I don't believe, thankfully, mercifully. Even like Young Justice, man. There's, because they brought Oracle onto Young Justice, the new season. And like, there was some scene I was watching on YouTube where it was her talking to talking to Bruce, and, you know, back and forth, blah, blah, blah. And in the comments, people were like, oh, this is after they slept together on the rooftop. And I'm like, no, that never happened. Don't think that that happened just because it was in that movie, because that never happened. Sorry.
No, you're perfectly valid. No, I mean, it's one of those things. There's never, as long as it involves your fan favorite character, winning, it doesn't matter how contrived it is. It doesn't matter how inappropriate it is. There's no reservation, so long as the hero gets to da-da-da, you know, even if it's, you know, while he's unzipping his crotch. There's just no boundaries sometimes. It's like, that's not who either of those characters are. A moment that he had with Catwoman, and I could definitely buy that with Catwoman. I cannot see that with Batgirl. But it's like, I will always prefer Oracle over Batgirl, in part just because that's mm-hmm. the character that I glommed to in a way that I didn't glom to Batgirl, even with the Batman 66 show. But there's no reason why you couldn't have done Birds of Prey with Batgirl as well. You know, they could have tweaked it, and it could have still been Batgirl, you know, and they didn't, because it was all about creating a vehicle for Harley Quinn, you know, and it was never about making a Birds of Prey movie, and that's very frustrating.
I suspect, because they supposedly have this Batgirl movie in the works, which, who knows if that's going to happen now, because the Birds of Prey movie was by the same writer, same director, maybe both. But I suspect, because they had the Batgirl movie supposedly in the works, that is the reason why they never even considered including Barbara in Birds of Prey. If they had a scene at the very end, like an after credits thing, where they all got a text message, you know, all except for Harley, got a text message, a mysterious text message from Oracle saying, you know, hey, I want to recruit you to my team, I may have gone to see that movie, but they didn't do that. So that's too bad.
That
I'm
sounds,
not hearing you if you're talking.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking. I was pausing to see if either of us had anything else to add.
I was going to say something else, but I don't. That's fine.
You know?
Paul Dini would have maybe for Feige replacement. Okay, let's be honest here. I would love to see Feige on DC Heroes. Like, can you imagine a Superman movie done by with Kevin Feige at the reins? I mean, look at what he did to Captain America. Nobody knew who Captain America was. He was a joke before. Imagine that kind of take on Superman. That'd be amazing. We're never going to get that.
I'm always wary of that because I've yet to meet a person involved with comics in any way that really can move from one universe to the other. I think that you're either adept at one universe or the other. I mean, Jack Kirby couldn't do it, you know? If Kirby couldn't do it, I don't know who anybody else can, but it always seems like you're going to take some of the essence of the other universe with you, some of the mindset of the other universe with you. And I think you really have to to approach each of those two universes as their own thing. If you just treat DC as a Marvel adjunct, it's not fully realizes the DC universe. I think it's compromised.
Yeah,
and so I feel like a lot of stuff. Again, you look at the Snyderverse. Okay, I'm no defender of the Snyder movies, the Murderverse, as they sometimes like to call it. I just don't hate those movies as much as most people. I'm pretty sure I would have hated his Justice League. Everything I've heard about his Justice League, I know there are things that he wanted to do with that movie that I just would not have agreed with. But I think that the DC guys really don't have a tolerance for the level of humor that the Marvel guys have. I think that they want more like iconic, heroic, kind of purer characters while also having some bad Broheim, grimdark tendencies as well that I don't think would be tolerated in Marvel.
The way that I've observed it from the past, coming up on 20 years following this stuff, they put out gritty Batman, and that does gangbusters, and it works for Batman. You can't really make that work for most of the characters that DC has, because gritty and ultra realistic, I'm sorry, the thing where he pulls a bullet out of the wall and gets a fingerprint will never be ultra realistic. I don't know how anybody bought that in that movie, but whatever. That works because it matches the character of Batman. That doesn't work for other characters. It's like Deadpool. The Deadpool movies work because it matches the character of Deadpool. You can't do that they tried it with Harley Quinn and it didn't make any money at the box office because that doesn't really match Harley's character. I mean, maybe to a certain, no, because she was never a fourth wall breaker. She was funny, but she was never like that level of
she was funny talking parody to the characters in the room. She wasn't talking to the audience.
Yeah. The trick is DC always says, well, this worked for this character. Let's supply it to the other character. And it doesn't work for the other character because it doesn't match the character. You know, you had the Dark Knight movies, and then I remember 2011, they had Green Lantern, and Green Lantern was their attempt. Oh, we're not trying to start a cinematic universe. Oh, I don't buy that for a minute. Every single one of your movies was an attempt to start a cinematic universe, even before the Avengers happened.
At least a franchise. It was never going to be one movie. That was deadly clear.
Yes. Green Lantern was their attempt at making a Marvel movie, and it didn't work. So what do? They bring in the guy opposite of Marvel, Zack Snyder, to do Superman because, dark and gritty realistic take worked for Batman, so let's do it for Superman. I've not seen Man of Steel. I know there are people who love that movie. I know there are people who hate that movie. I know that having Superman snap the bad guy's neck at the end of the movie is very much not a Superman thing to do. That's as far as I'm going to go there. You had Batman v Superman. I saw Batman v Superman. Wasn't my cup of tea. Batman v Superman was trying to course correct from Man of Steel because everybody said for Man of Steel, oh my goodness, they're destroying all the cities and why is Superman not saving people? So then you had the obvious, oh, they're going to that uninhabited island in the middle of the river for Batman v Superman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they made a point of letting Batman be the super dark character so they can make Superman kind of the clueless doofus. So it still wasn't in service to Superman at all. It was still in service to doing a Batman movie. It's just they didn't try to make a Superman movie into a Batman movie. They just made a Batman movie and forced Superman into it.
Yeah, and not even he's a symbol of hope. I never saw anything in that movie. Well, I mean, you had the scene where he rescues the people at, was it Dia de los Muertos or whatever, and they're all looking up to him and he's got like this sour expression on his face. They never really pulled across that he makes people feel better. Well, especially because you in that movie you had all the whole, we don't want Superman, he's, you know, this evil alien, blah blah blah, whatever. So that movie didn't work. So then they tried course correct for Justice League, kicked out Zack Snyder entirely. You know, his daughter, the tragedy. I've heard people say that he really did quit because of that. I've heard people say they used that as an excuse to kick him out of the movie and bring in Joss Whedon to try to course correct. Either way, it didn't work.
Yeah, if the intention was just to finish the movie after a tragic circumstance, you wouldn't go and reshoot a substantial portion of the movie as a result.
This is true.
You would just shoot the scenes you needed to finish things up. It'd be more like something like The Crow or Poltergeist 3. When you go in there and you just start refilming all this stuff, that's there. It's using it as an excuse. And so that makes it doubly queasy.
Yeah. But yeah, so Justice League, attempted to course correct and that didn't work. And I don't know what they're trying to. I think they're, I don't know how many movies based super again trying to imitate what worked for Joker because it fits his character. But how many now ultra realistic takes on characters are we going to get inspired by the Joker movie as opposed to? I mean, I haven't. Did you see Shazam? I haven't seen.
I saw as much of it as I could. It was one where it came on cable. I'd already passed on it several opportunities, but it came on cable and I started watching it. And it opened up with Thaddeus Savannah as a boy and him being offered the Shazam power by the wizard. And I was already, I was kind of interested just because it was not the opening I was expecting. And I stung on for a little bit longer just because I was curious to see how that was going to play out, even though it really felt like it was too much of a Luthor kind of thing, not enough of a Savannah thing. And then once they got to telling stories about Billy Batson, it was like, this is so, there's no reason for this to exist. This doesn't serve any particular audience. It's just another Superman riff, but with the whole, you know, boy becomes a Superman, but there's no audience for this that needs this movie to exist. And the kid was so obnoxious and he was way too old to act that immature. And it was all about, well, what if you had a little boy if you had a lousy little brat have the powers of Superman, you know, how that would play out, who's also kind of a coward and kind of a doofus. And I don't understand how kids would enjoy the movie, because when I was a kid, I wanted my intelligence and my abilities to be respected. And it seems like it's the kind of movie that you make for adults to dunk on kids and how dumb they are and the mistakes they make, and they try to turn Shazam into a Spider-Man type, but way less intelligent than Spider-Man. And so I just found it extremely infuriating. And it basically seemed to be a movie about reinforcing the biases that were already in place against the character of Shazam. And the only thing they did that was interesting was they do introduce the Shazam family, and that does have an enormous amount of diversity to it, which is nice. It's good to see people with that level of power who don't all look like the same old white dude. But the problem is the leader of them is the same old freaking white dude. And plus, I'm sorry, Zachary Levi was just driving me insane. I hated his performance. I hated his suit. I liked that it was bright and colorful, but he looked like he was inflated. He looks like he's a skinny guy wearing a thick suit, and he just looks goofy. And everybody looks so much better than him in their suits and just seemed cooler and different. You know, even a bearded guy, it's like, at least in Superman with a beard, that's something visually stimulating that's a little bit different. Too much of it was just like dumb jackass Superman, and I just couldn't get on board with it. And it wasn't particularly well written, and the Savannah that they have in the movie is in no way a resemblance of the character from the comics. He's just a thug. He's basically a prototype for Black Adam. So just, why don't you go ahead and have Black Adam? I'd much rather see The Rock doing this stuff than Mark Strong, who'd already, you know, whiffed the ball one time on Green Lantern as Sinestro. Yeah. And did a much better job of Sinestro, by the way. So yeah, it was bad. And it made decent money, and they're supposed to make a second one. I do think there was some audience for it, but I think that's the same audience who were laughing at Dr. Doolittle shoving his arm up a dragon's butt. You know, I that's just not, you know, I don't think you're going to get Marvel numbers with that kind of shenanigans. And I honestly, I think that the second movie is probably not going to do as well, because I think the novelty is going to wear off really fast. Unless The Rock is the selling point. As long as they've got Black Adam front and center, they'll probably do fine. But without The Rock, I think they're going to be in real trouble.
Man, I've heard people saying, oh, The Rock is Black Adam for probably at least 10 years at this point.
Yeah, and he's an executive producer on the first movie. I hope he gets some bank off of that. But yeah, he's been teasing for an awful long time.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen it myself. I have a friend who, I think he read the Fawcett comics as a kid, and so he said it wasn't that bad. But okay, that's an interesting to hear. Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do after Wonder Woman 84. I mean, well, okay, we know what they're doing. They're doing the another new reboot of Batman again.
I'm not really the market for Batman movies. If they do some interesting stuff, they got some interesting characters. They've got a good cast. They've got some villains I like. The thing that I like is that the director and the star, I think, are a good match for the type of material. And so while I'm not the audience for it, if they come out with a kick butt trailer, then I'll go ahead and watch it. I'll go see that. But yeah, it's definitely playing it safe. Let's get another Batman movie out there. We know you guys like them Batman movies.
Yeah, everybody loves Batman.
But then you got Superman. Superman sitting on the shelf, and I think that's one of the tricky things is you're talking about how Feige and company did such a great job with the first Avenger. But Winter Soldier and Civil War and all the other Marvel movies aren't the first Avenger. The first Avenger kind of stands out. I know a lot of DC guys where their favorite Marvel movie is the first Avenger because it is so much more of a DC movie for the most part than a Marvel movie. The problem with the Superman movie and getting that right is every Superman movie has to be the first Avenger, not Winter Soldier, not Civil War. They all have to be the first Avenger. Captain America can be the bright light in these darker places, but Superman, by virtue of no other reason than he's so powerful, if he's not bringing light to those places, if he's not reversing the dark conclusively, if he doesn't exist in a sphere of light where the darkness is like one small element in the midst of a bright universe, you're doing it wrong. And that's a paradigm that I don't think a lot of creators involved with these projects can wrap their brain around. I don't think they understand how to tell a story that really is an all ages, hopeful, optimistic movie with a character like Superman without letting all that dark stuff getting in the midst of it. It's one of those reasons why it's hard to even have a DC shared universe, because Batman doesn't work unless he's in a field of darks, and it doesn't make sense for him and Superman to live in the same universe. So you just downplay that as much as possible, but you have to be able to tell first Avenger style movies with Superman all the time. Even Ant-Man, but they kind of struggle with the Ant-Man movies to sustain that as well.
Well, going with Scott Lang instead of Hank Pym was probably a wise choice there.
I mean, but in terms of tone, they try to keep those super light, and that worked fairly well for the first Ant-Man movie, I think in part because of the stakes and because we're first getting introduced to those characters. But when you get to the second movie with Walton Goggins and everything, the attempted lightness of that stands apart from the other Marvel movies, and I don't know that they showed that they had a great aptitude for maintaining that lighter tone. It just seemed like a very disposable. It seemed like they weren't. It seemed ephemeral. You know, you didn't feel like that was a movie you had to see. It felt like they maybe didn't quite know how to handle it. They just decided they wanted Ant-Man and Wasp to be lighter than the other Marvel movies, and that it definitely was. But I'd like you look at something like, say, a Big Hero 6 or Pixar kind of attitude, where you can have a little bit of dark stuff in it to give it weight, but it's still overwhelmingly a light, family-friendly experience. And I don't think that Marvel strikes that balance particularly well, and I'd like to see somebody at DC do that, and I'd like them to see them do it with a character like Superman.
Yeah, I could totally see a Pixar Superman. If they weren't opposite companies, that could probably work out. I don't know. I've heard rumors that DC's going to bring in J.J. Abrams to do stuff, which...
No.
Look... The first one will be good, and then it will go downhill quickly because he will set up mystery boxes that he doesn't have answers for, and then other people will try to pull in answers, and they won't be satisfying.
He did
because J.J. Abrams.
He wrote a Superman script already.
He did, yeah.
Nope.
Well, the one I saw was, is it Justice League Dark he's going to do? They just said? Mixing up creators.
I got a whole bag of nope right here. I'm just going to keep pulling out these nopes. I think that there are definitely DC characters J.J. Abrams could do. I've never been able to wrap my brain around the concept of a Justice League Dark. It's like, why, if you're going to do like dark supernatural characters, why would you use the Justice League branding for that? It's just like, you want to feel a sense of stakes, you want to feel a sense of horror and mystery, and then you throw Justice League on top of that, and like, how do you, okay, so at any time when a woman can come in here and save the day, it's like, it just doesn't fit. You've got to do Vertigo, do you know, Dark Universe, or Universe, you know, whatever you got to do, but don't call it Justice League Dark, and don't put J.J. Abrams on that, because I do not think about horror when I think about J.J. Abrams, aside from the quality.
My brain is connecting this because it was rumored at one point, but Guillermo del Toro might be a good option for that.
Yeah, he's out.
He maybe was supposed to do one.
I heard that they were trying to woo him back again, but he's been out for a while. Guillermo would absolutely be perfect for something like that. It wouldn't come out until 2032, but he would be perfect for that.
Yeah, that's accurate. Yeah, I'm concerned if, it says here, J.J. Abrams producing Justice League Dark series for HBO Max. Okay, so they're not like putting him in front, in charge of a new reboot or a soft reboot or anything, so at least that, but...
And Bad Robot has done some okay production, so as long as he's not the one actually shepherding it, it should be fine. I think he's actually got a pretty decent production crew at Bad Robot. I could be fine with that, you know? I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the same guy rebooted Star Wars and Star Trek, and they both went downhill quickly, so...
Yeah, no, that's why I'm saying he himself should not be involved with that. He definitely needs to farm that out to people who are a firmer hand on that sort of material. I wish he would not write his own stuff. I think he's perfectly fine as a director. I don't really love him very much as a writer. And even if he were to come up with a basic story, if he gets somebody to rewrite his material and he would be fine with, you know, doing that, that'd be okay. I don't want him writing, I really don't want him writing any superhero stuff, but, you know.
Well, so that makes him the perfect choice to do Star Wars, because that makes him exactly like George Lucas.
Yeah. Well, hey, the Phantom Menace fan can't really get in.
No, okay, yeah. Look, I was 10. I had been a Star Wars fan.
Not when you watched it the second time.
I was a Star Wars fan in the 90s when it was not cool to be a Star Wars fan. I remember like trying to find other people who to talk about Star Wars with in grade school, and like nobody else was interested in it. So, in the dark years before the Phantom Menace happened. So,
well, and I'll be honest with you, I think George Lucas's plot for the prequels were fine. I think that they're particularly in the first movie, because he was clearly borrowing heavily from Isaac Asimov for that. I think that the basics of that are perfectly fine. I think that he needed somebody to do another pass at the script and you know, tidy some stuff up. And probably shouldn't have directed them, honestly, at that point in his career. But I don't fault anybody for enjoying those movies. You know, I didn't. If I were smart, I would have stopped the prequels and wouldn't have carried on to the J.J. Abrams stuff that I got 2/3 of the way through. But that wasn't for me. And like you said, it was made for the 10-year-olds, and there's a whole generation of 10-year-olds who do cleave to those movies to their breast. And I don't fault them for that. They're just not my movies. But, you know, I don't fault them for that. You know, it just wasn't made for me. So I don't want to be one of those crotchety old men who's like, oh, in my day, the Star Wars movies were great. It's like, no, just go, you know, let people have their generation's version of this thing that you liked, you know?
I will say that Attack of the Clones was the worst. I'm not a fan of. Just to save myself a little face.
And you know, actually, what's funny is I saw that theatrically. At the time that I saw it, I liked it the best of the prequel trilogy. And then it was on cable the other day, and it was the smoldering plant sequence where they're all in the giant like liquid metal and stuff. And it was
the scene that nobody remembers until they rewatch the movie. Yes.
Yeah, and it was so terrible. It, like everything about it. Like, why does R2-D2 push C-3PO into the line and then his head gets switched? And just it was Oddworld. I don't know if you're old enough to remember the Oddworld games, but it was basically just a scene from Oddworld. And none of the character actors looked in any way like they were interacting with anything remotely real. It was absolutely, it was astonishing
how
bad it was.
2004 CGI.
Yeah, that too.
Or no, 2002 CGI.
I did catch the sand scene again. I forgot that the sand scene was in that movie.
It's not as bad as I'm not afraid to die. I've been dying a little bit every day since you came back into my life. Oh, shut up. Nobody talks like that. I liked her in the Phantom Menace. She was the cool queen who got to shoot blasters and dress up in pretty dresses. Okay, why are you doing this to Padme?
I may be wrong, but wasn't she cool at the end of Attack of the Clones? Or am I just misremembering? I remember her and they're fighting the giant monsters and she's got like the ripped midsection and she's shooting the blasters and stuff.
Yeah,
I remember her being cool in that.
Even as a kid, I thought the whole, wait, she has one scratch from the cat monster and now suddenly her suit is torn perfectly to, you know, do the early 2000s midriff thing. Okay. But yeah, I don't know. Her overly romantic attitude. I don't know. She just, the way she was all hanging on off of Anakin's every word was just like, come on, man. That's, no.
Weren't you the older person in this relationship? Like,
yes, she's like 9 years older than, no, she's not 9 years older than him. She's like 5 years older than him. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. She was 14. He was 9. So yeah. Okay. But yeah, she's, you know, this senator who's supposed to be in charge, and she used to be a queen because 14-year-old queens makes sense to a 10-year-old. It did. Yeah.
No, well, actually, no, I don't have a problem with that. I think back to like some of the feudal emperors and stuff, and that's fine. If all the things to get hung up on in those movies, that's the least of them. And like you said, she looked cool. I loved the face paint and the outfits and everything. She looked really cool. I remember going into those movies, how excited I was for it, because visually there was a lot in their favor. It looked really interesting and it looked different from the other Star Wars movies. I dug that about it.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've been going a long time and we haven't been talking about the cheetah. So however long you want to continue.
I'm just letting you go at this point, because it's like, as long as you're cool, I'll find some place to put the stuff. I've got places to stick Star Wars stuff. I've got places to stick DCEU rant. It's like, matter of fact, that'd probably be the easiest thing for me, because I still haven't worked out what I'm going to put out this week. And it's like, if I threw out a rolled spine or a DC special, it's like minimal editing, just chop out the worst bits. It's like, I'm covered. You're giving me material. I'm just going to let you go until you get tired.
Okay, can't think of anything really else that... Let's check the news, see if anything horrible has happened in the last 24 hours.
What about this Lysol injection?
The comic book news, let me clarify, the nerdy comic book news. I'm not talking about real world, I'm talking about comic books. Mandalorian season titles revealed. Silver and Black director says movie could be a limited series on Disney Plus. What? No, that's never coming out. Don't...
I know, it's just like, it's been so long since I've heard anything about Silver and Black, I didn't think that was even a thing anymore. I'd heard that was...
Last I heard they were splitting it, and it wasn't going to be Silver and Black anymore. It was going to be a Silver Sable movie and then a Black Cat movie. But...
And see, I thought the coolest thing about that was that they're...
That was one of those, we're going to make this Spider-Man cinematic universe all based off Amazing Spider-Man 2, and then that bombed badly. And so they're like, okay, that doesn't work.
Well, the funny thing about Amazing Spider-Man 2 is it actually didn't bomb. It did poor in the U.S. So what they found is, you know, they want to do well everywhere, and they found that if you don't do well in the U.S., then you basically start to decline everywhere else too. So what that they didn't make money off of it is that they thought they were not going to be guaranteed to make money off the next one. So it's sort of like a Planet of the Apes thing. The Tim Burton Planet of the Apes did the same thing where it made money, but nobody liked it, and they knew that nobody liked it. Yeah. So they're like, okay, we're going to try this a different way somewhere down the line, which is why I look forward to Matt Reeves doing Batman. Even though I don't care about a Batman movie, I'd much rather them do anything besides a Batman movie. But he's one of the people that if you're going to do a Batman movie, he'd probably be a good guy to have doing that. But one of the things I thought was most interesting about Silver Black was putting the two of them together. Black Cat is Catwoman, period. The only thing that separates her from Catwoman is that she hangs out with Spider-Man instead of Batman. But Silver Sable is kind of her own thing. But Silver Sable isn't a popular enough character to give her own movie to. You know, there just isn't enough material to draw from. And you know, it'd basically just be a movie that happened to have a tenuous relationship to a comic book, kind of a barbed wire kind of thing, which is not a good starting point at all. But you put those two together, you've got a lot more material to draw from Black Cat, and you've got a very different relationship between Silver Sable and Black Cat than you would have with necessarily any other team up you could do. It's very much like, it reminds me of like a Power Man and Iron Fist, where the fact that these two characters should not have anything to do with each other, they don't necessarily make sense together, but they kind of do because you've got an energy that you're going to get from pairing these dissimilar characters that would be in service to this universe we're trying to do. I like the idea of a mercenary cat burglar buddy comedy, you know, or even just a thriller. You know, there's so many different ways you could go with that. I was more excited about Silver and Black than I was for a lot of the other stuff. It's like, I kind of want to see Morbius. I dug the trailer. Jared Leto is a super problematic dude, but if I like that a movie like Morbius would not happen at Marvel for sure.
Disney.
Yeah,
you go back and look at those Phase One movies, and there is so much stuff in there that would never happen now because they weren't under the Disney banner.
Yeah,
and part of me wonders what would have happened if that hadn't been the case. But part of me is also like, but would they have been as popular if it hadn't had Disney's backing? You know, all of Disney's marketing.
Yeah, yeah. Because especially when you watch Iron Man again, it's like, well, they got away with a lot more stuff than I remembered. but yeah, it's just like, you know, they fired Scott Derrickson, or he quit Doctor Strange because he wanted to do more of a horror story, and they wouldn't let him. So there's no way you're going to get a Morbius movie like that.
Raimi.
Oh, I know. Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah.
But,
no.
But 100% Sam Raimi doing another Steve Ditko character.
Okay. Well, Raimi can do, like, I look at something like Drag Me to Hell, which is not a horror movie in the sense of it being scary, but it's definitely a horror movie in the sense of it being tense and high, like it's an adrenaline movie. It's a movie where you're like, ah, and you tone down a little bit of the gore, tone down a little bit of the violence, and you can still make that movie work. You can still make that as a PG-13 Marvel movie, I think. It's just heavy enough to still be in the horror genre, but light enough to where you can show it to general audiences. It's not an Evil Dead movie. And so knowing what a virtuoso Sam Raimi is at that type of material, and knowing how gonzo he can go, I want to see him going into places like the Dark Dimension and stuff. I want to see him, you know, work his magic. I want to see him do crazy stuff with the cameras that nobody else would get to do. So I am so much more excited about that movie with Sam Raimi attached than I was going to be otherwise. Although I was pretty excited because I like Scarlet Witch, and I'm really thinking it could be interesting to see what happens with her after WandaVision. But Sam Raimi doing Doctor Strange is, for me, far more perfect than Sam Raimi doing Spider-Man. It makes way more sense for him to do Doctor Strange. And I love Sam Raimi when he gets to be his full Raiminess. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
Supposedly from, was it the Sony leaks, that they were going to offer him like a, back when, we just have to keep pumping out Spider-Man movies and they'll constantly make money. The rumor I heard was they were going to offer him a Spider-Man, if not trilogy, then at least standalone movie set in the 60s, which would have been amazing to see. I'm kind of bummed we won't get that. But yeah, with him taking on Doc Strange should be cool. And is it before WandaVision or after? I thought it was supposed to be after WandaVision.
My feeling is that WandaVision is setting her up for a heel turn. I think they're going to set her up for going nuts. Yeah, and so I think that you're going to have to have... And just the simple fact that WandaVision is going to come out before Mouth of Madness or Multiverse of Madness. So yeah, clearly one's going to go into the other. And I think quite probably Scott Shortwich is going to end up being the villain of that one, unfortunately. But that's kind of her arc too.
The first still that we got with them, you know, looking all sitcom-y and the shadows being their classic silhouettes. Excuse me. I was like, oh dear. Guys, Vision isn't back. This is our House of M. Vision is not back. This is Wanda creating her own reality in her head, and people are gonna you know, have to break that, and then she'll snap and mess everything up, and then we get it all resolved in Multiverse of Madness. Because yeah, no, the Vision is not back. Here I thought he was gonna be back. No, this is House of M. Oh, we're in trouble.
Oh yeah, and I think that's why she had such a great moment in Endgame, where she seemed like she was gonna single-handedly beat Thanos for a minute there, because they're setting her up as the next big threat for another movie, so it makes sense.
Yeah, honestly, her first appearance in Age of Ultron, when her brother died, I thought we were gonna get a No More Mutants type of situation there, where she was just gonna rewrite reality, but no. And actually, what would be cool if they break her brain in Multiverse of Madness, the film is a sequel to Doctor Strange and a crossover slash sequel to WandaVision and Loki. Okay, yeah. If they break her brain that way in Multiverse of Madness, imagine how ecstatic the comics fans will be if she says, now mutants exist, instead of no more mutants. That would be like the brilliant way to bring mutants into the MCU. It'd be to have all of the mutants, or now there's mutants, or whatever. To have her rewrite reality to bring in the mutants. That would be cool. And if Kevin Feige uses that, everybody listening to this had better tweet at him so that he knows that he owes me 25 cents for every movie ticket that gets sold for Multiverse of Madness.
I'll send you a $200 personal check like Jim Shooter did for the black costume Spider-Man.
Hey, you know, they had no idea how big that was going to be back in the day. And let's face it, if they screwed over Jack Kirby, they're going to screw over everybody. That's just life. It's just a fact of the industry that you got to accept.
I never heard that podcast, and I've got better lawyers than you have, so... This never happened. No more podcasts. Poof, and they're all gone.
He can't cancel me. I violate DC's copyrights, not Marvel's. One of my favorite conventions of the year. I missed last year because it was like a week after I broke my leg. And it was like, Doc, is there any chance that I can go? No. I mean, not. You want to travel, you know, all the way across the state for this 3-day convention with a broken leg? That's probably not the best plan. It's like, oh, okay. And then it ended up, I got admitted to the hospital that weekend anyway because of blood clot and all that funness. But it was supposed to be the end of March. And I kept watching their website. And they're like, okay, this is going to go. Everybody, you know, be careful. We'll have hand sanitizer everywhere. We've talked with the hotel. We're all good. And then, everything shut down. And it's like, okay, that's rescheduled till August. Which, to be fair, gave me time to work on my costume, which is nice. But
yeah, with me, I started going to comic conventions regularly again in 2010. I actually ran booths at some cons back in the 90s, but I hadn't gone for years. And so in 2010, I went to the Comicpalooza, like roughly the second year they had one. That's the Houston Con, and that got my first commissions at that convention, and I've gone every year since. So this would have been my 10th anniversary. Comicpalooza is canceled, period. This was going to be the year that I went to my first horror convention, and after going to Comic Cons for 10 years, I was really looking forward to something different, and I've scratched my superhero itch for so many years, but like I'm a big horror fan too, and the thought of going to a horror convention and seeing a whole different bunch of people and not really knowing what to expect, because I don't know what they sell at a horror convention. I don't know what they're going to have there. And so I was really kind of giddy about that. And of course, that's gotten pushed to September if I'm lucky. And then also, I was going to do Dragon Con for the first time this year. I've never been. Nice. I've heard so many great things about it. So me and my buddy were going to drive out there. I know tons of people who've already got their hotel rooms and everything else. Is it going to happen? I'm not optimistic. All that gets tumbled down.
You said com- commissions. Apologies if I haven't listened to enough of your shows, but no. Are you an artist? Do you draw?
No, the other side of the table. I pay people to draw stuff
for me. You pay them to... Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. I got my first commission, so I'm like, wait, he draws? What do I need drawing? I need something.
Right, no kidding, right? I used to do some drawing, and I'm not completely terrible, but I'm also nowhere near as good as pretty much any single individual you would find at one of these conventions, and so I'd much rather them draw stuff out of my brain than me, like, hate myself and hate everything that comes out of my pencil.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and you can actually get some pretty good stuff for from fair rates. I mean, you can get a commission for as cheap as 10, 20 bucks, you know? Especially because I was also a Martian Manhunter fan, and so when I was running a daily Martian Manhunter blog, it was really cool to get these super obscure 60s characters that nobody cared about and get them drawn by people in a more modern style. And the artists seem to really like it because they're so weird and unusual, as opposed to drawing Batman for the 50,000th time. so they really would get off on it. And what happened, though, is I stopped having the daily blog, and I have pieces that have been sitting unseen by anybody for 6 years or so. And it's just like, I think they can tell that I don't have the enthusiasm as much. And what I get back from them kind of reflects that as well. And it's sort of like, like almost like it's out of habit now. And it's like, I really need to think of doing something different, because none of us are getting what we want out of this anymore. And I could probably stand to save the money and pay off some credit cards. It gets me too, because he just reminded me, I've never really done Wonder Woman stuff because I didn't run a daily blog on Wonder Woman. So it didn't really occur to me. Plus, she's so much more prevalent in the pop culture. I don't feel like I need to shine a spotlight on her as much. Everybody knows who she is, and people now love her, as opposed to the decades where nobody gave a crud about her, were constantly telling me all the ways they could fix her to make her better and making my blood boil. But I really wanted to do either a series of commissions of Wonder Woman's villains, since they don't get nearly as much attention, or to do a jam. And so I set up with a really great artist, the guy whose stuff I really, really enjoy. And so I paid him what he asked me to pay him, which I believe was $200. And then 3 years later, I finally tracked him down at a con and got his rough pencil sketch and half of my money back. So that's what happened with my Wonder Woman commissions. It's so, like, it was a $200 commission, so he charged me $100 for an extremely rough layout that nobody could do anything with if I asked them to, and they'd be better off just starting from scratch. So I will never commission with that particular artist again. He's one of the few guys that's like, well, is forever banned with me. Some guys make it up to me, but he's this instance where it's like, no, I'm never going to have anything to do with you again, which is a shame, because he is a really good artist when he shows up. But I also noticed that I don't think I'm the only one who's had that happen to them. And so he for a guy who's as good as he is, his table never seems to be swamped, and he spends way too much time on his phone at cons. So I should have read the content clues.
When it was whatever year, I was at the local con, going through the artist alley, and I'm like, man, this is more Flash than I have ever seen anybody draw. Oh right, there's that Flash TV show now. Because I'm a bad nerd. I have seen half a season of Arrow, the first episode of Flash, the first season, and maybe 3 episodes of Supergirl. I did watch all of Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover that they did, which I wish they'd focused more on some of the oh, look at all these guest stars we brought in. Oh, now they're dead.
Yeah.
Like when they replaced the everybody has love for Christopher Reeve, I am perfectly happy with that. I didn't really grow up with the character. Plus, my superhero-ness as a kid was, DC sucks. But dude, Brandon Routh as Kingdom Come Superman was so perfect. And when they replaced him with Lex Luthor, I was just like, why? He was so good. I wanted more of him. Especially since, like, I guess technically, canonically, he is Christopher Reeve Superman, right? Because Christopher Reeve Superman canonically turned into Brandon Routh in Superman Returns, and then this canonically is the continuation of Brandon Routh's Superman. So technically speaking, that is Christopher Reeve's Superman, and then you just had him disappear and get replaced with their Lex Luthor, who, hey, he's a good Lex Luthor. I don't have any problems with that, but you erased this brilliant version of Superman who every time I look at his costume, I want to cry because it's so perfect, and you just erased him. Just, nope, he's gone now. Bye.
Well, and also, as you said, Brandon Routh was hired in part to do a Christopher Priest, Christopher Reeve impersonation.
That's slightly different there.
Yeah, there's a big melanin difference for sure. But he's replaced by Lex Luthor's nephew from Superman 4, the worst Superman movie. So it's like, wait, just for me as an old timer, it was that extra little twist of the knife there when they did that.
Superman's nephew from, wait, yeah, what?
The guy who currently plays Lex Luthor in the Berlantiverse.
Oh, that's right.
Played Lex Luthor's nephew in Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Right.
Yeah, sorry. I know.
I forgot that connection. The last two episodes of the I don't remember if it was two or three episodes that was the end of the that was after the month-long break. But the last two episodes, as someone who doesn't watch the Arrowverse, I didn't like it. It was. Do you care about spoilers?
No.
Okay.
I'm pretty
Green
sure
Arrow died again.
If it really mattered to me, I probably could have sought this stuff out on my own. So clearly, it's not that important.
They kill Green Arrow off at the end of the first episode of the crossover. Then they killed him off again at the penultimate episode of the crossover, and then and of course defeated the Anti-Monitor. I almost said Dark Side. The Anti-Monitor. And then you still had the Legends of Tomorrow episode where they defeated the Anti-Monitor again. It's like, didn't we just do this? It was much less climactic defeating him a second time than it was when you're, you know, sacrificing your hero again for the second time in the penultimate episode. It's just like, why would you do that? So, yeah. But getting back to my original point, I was at the Artist Alley. I was seeing all this Flash stuff I'd never seen before. Excuse me. And I was like, because at the time, Titans was going to be on TBS or TNT or whatever channel it was.
Yeah, I remember that.
And
yeah.
I was really excited because I'm like, oh, they're going to bring Oracle onto that Titans show. So like in a year, I'll come back and there's going to be all this Oracle fan art. No, that didn't happen. the show got canceled or that got canned and they brought it back on the DC app. And now supposedly they're going to bring her into season 3, but I'm not holding my breath because they've messed up her character too many times already.
Well, that and the penetration of the DC Universe properties is not great. So, I mean, I've seen a little bit more Doom Patrol activity, yeah, but I don't think a lot of people are watching the DC Universe app. So there's a reason why Stargirl will not be exclusive to the app. So, yeah, even if they do bring her in, I'm not sure how many people are actually going to get to put their eyeballs on it.
I've heard rumors they're going to fold the app into this HBO Max thing, which probably won't involve all the comic back issues that you can read, which is going to suck because that would have been one of my big reasons to subscribe would have been all those back issues would have saved me some right. trouble looking up obscure stuff. But
well, it's like the Marvel Unlimited app, I think maybe sometimes hurts the sales of the monthly comics because if you wait 6 months, then they're going to be on the app for, you know, a fixed price, which a lot of us seem to like, especially if we don't get around to reading our stuff in a timely fashion anyway. So I think DC saw that seemed to have hurt Marvel sales somewhat, and I don't think they wanted to replicate it. But the problem is this whole thing where they have the curated selection and they only give you some books for a certain amount of time. It just makes it seem less valuable to me because, like, I'm not going to subscribe to an app where I can't be confident of what's going to be available on it. I'm not buying a lot of DC.
Is that how the DC one works?
Yeah, it's curated. So they have a selection of books and then they cycle some of those books out and they put other books on. And I think
I was unaware of this. Yeah. That makes me want to subscribe less. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think certain books, like I think Batman, they tend to have, you know, perpetually because they know that's like their baby.
Well, of course.
But
everybody loves Batman.
Yeah. But a lot of the other stuff.
Have you seen the I'm a Marvel, I'm a DC videos from YouTube?
I saw the old Dell ones years ago. They got something else going on? Like
No. It back when they had those I'm a Mac, I'm a PC commercials.
Yeah,
like 10, 11 years ago now.
Yeah.
Probably closer to 15. There was this guy on YouTube. He had his action figures and he holds them up in front of the camera. It's Spider-Man and Superman. And, you know, hi, I'm a Marvel and I'm a DC. And then they banter back and forth in the style of those commercials.
Yeah.
And that show has gone on for close to 15 years I'm sure. Developed all this lore and constantly commenting, commentary on superhero movies and properties at the time. And it's a really great show. But his first episode, one of the lines is, you know, Spidey gets all excited. Oh, I heard they cast Two-Face in the new Batman. And he's like, yeah, everybody loves Batman. Because, of course, at the time, what Superman Returns had either just come out or was just about to come out. And, you know, was the disappointment that it was.
Yeah, but I might have seen the early ones.
That show up, it's really good. I had like 10 years to back up to read to watch.
No idea it had that kind of longevity. And like I said, I may have seen like one or two 15 years ago. So it's like
there were years where he came out with maybe one video a year.
Okay.
But then he got a Patreon. And so now he's like every month, at least two or three episodes.
I will check that out.
Okay. Well, I better get going.
I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, himself. Wonderful, marvelous, and so very special. The 108th Sage, Dr. Ainge, Biko Django, Bone Dragon Comics, Chris Thompson, Coffee and Comics, Darwin Revello, Derek William Crabb from History of Comics on Film and Fanholes Podcast, Dmitry Pimenov, Dr. G, Nerdologist, Etsum, El Romero Mero, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, Hers Jobs, Paul Hicks, Jeffrey Brown, Jeremiah Parker, Just in Time with the JNT Baggers, Justice Trek 2020, Keith G. Baker, KSCGSF Podcast, Long Box Crusade, Long Box of Darkness, Max Traver, Min, Nathaniel Devin Sanford, Nethead, Odell Abner Dracula, Pensator Comic, Philip McGillary, Randy Caldwell, who tweeted still wrapping my head over Dr. Psycho and Giganta having offspring, hashtag Harley Quinn, Ranger Gord, Relatively Geeky, Richard G., Robert Speculum Fight, Ryan Daly, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Sean Phillips, Shinji 70, Siskoid, Son of Cthulhu, Terrence Costange, Tim Price the Pod Crasher, Tony Wolf, Trekker Talk, Walt Nealand, Warlord Worlds, Wonder Woman, Warrior for Peace Podcast, and finally, Xenozoic Xenophiles.
The preceding program is a nonprofit fan production. Any copyrighted materials contained therein are believed borrowed under fair use with no copyright infringement intended. Please feel free to leave comments at the Rolled Spine's Productions WordPress blog. You can also send us Twitter comments through the Rolled Spine Podcast Twitter. Thank you for listening. Yes, I'm special. Yes, I'm special.